Christian life is not meant to be a mere dip in the pool. Our generous God offers a wellspring of eternal blessings for those who accept His love and forgiveness. Northgate Church is a community where believers are encouraged to wholeheartedly follow Christ and fully experience God's goodness. A new message series presents 7 ways to go all in through baptism, welcoming, serving, group life, giving, inviting, and sharing our stories. Here's today's message.
Welcome to Northgate. I'm glad you're here. It's been, we had a week, right? We had a quite an interesting week here, but there's 2 things that for me were just these moments of reminders of how much God is in control, even when things are out of our control. One of them was I thought back when Pastor Vern sent me a message yesterday morning and asked if I could be ready a week early, is when I told Lucas and Anthony on Thursday, I said, I feel good about this message. I could probably preach it this weekend if I had to. Now, when I said that, I didn't want to, and that wasn't my plan, but I did think, okay, that's good. And then another one that was really cool in regards to the incident on Wednesday was when we had somebody, actually Stephanie, she's right there, so I'm going to point you out, said, wouldn't it be a cool way to support the people that were there if we all join them next week? And I thought, that's such a great idea. Let's do that. And we put it on Facebook and started to get traction. And then I had somebody say, would it be okay if somebody that doesn't go to Northgate, they wanted to come to support the people? Would it be all right if they came to the prayer walk as well? And I was like, no, please. You know, it's like, yes. That's amazing. Yeah, bring them. So just those things where you see that God is in control, even during things that we don't choose and things that we probably wished did not happen. So we're talking about being all in. We've got a series all in this summer, and I think it's really great how this worked out, because when we put the posters up for all in, it had the dates and the topics, and I was like, people aren't going to come on the giving week. You can't tell people we're talking about giving August 18th and 19th. Everyone will be on vacation or at home. So we put that out, and then you guys walked in this week being like, hey, group life, now it's giving, and you're stuck. Now you can't leave, all right? You're here. So we just got to go through it. But we have to talk about this for a variety of reasons. The 2 subjects that Jesus addresses the most in the New Testament are 1, love, and 2, money and possessions. So we would be doing you a disservice to not address something that Jesus spent so much of his ministry talking about. And sometimes there's this natural pushback, right? The first thing that some people think is, the church just wants my money. I'd say, hey, don't raise your hand if that's what you're thinking. But that is a thing that sometimes people think. And I want to tell you, I got to be honest with you, that's an indictment of the condition of your heart. It is. If that's your first pushback, the church just wants my money, that's an indictment of the condition of your heart. Here's what I mean. Apple just wants your money, right? Apple, they don't care about you at all. They just want your money, but they have your heart. So it's okay when the iPhone 11 XQ42 comes out. You're like, here, take my $1,000, Apple, right? That's it. The Bills just want your money. I'm rooting for the Bills too, but listen, they don't care about you. The NFL made $14 billion last year. They want your money. The church, we have much different motives when we talk about your money. Sometimes people will say, I don't trust the church with my money. And I'm going to give you a heads up. If you bring your kids here, don't say that to me, because you're going to say, I don't trust the church with my money. And I'll say, do you send your kids to our kids programming? Yeah. You trust us with your kids, but not your money. Let's talk about the condition of your heart. If you don't have kids, I got a different one. I'm going to save that for you. I can give you all my tricks. But here's the main point. I want to make sure we're really clear on this jumping in. We don't teach on giving and money because we want something from you. We do it because we want something for you. We don't. That's not our motive at all. You'll notice if you're a regular attender, like Pastor Vern said, we received our offering early in the service. I did not want to do it after this message. I don't want to talk about giving and then pass the plates like it's a test, right? Now let's see how you did, guys, right? If you were planning to give and then you gave, that's great. And if you were not, I don't want you to feel guilted into doing it. And truthfully, Northgate is in the strongest financial position we've been in a long, long time. We are a church full of faithful and generous givers. There are so many people here who understand this. And so if you hear that and you're saying so can we stop giving now? No, that's not the point. You missed the point. If you're checking the Pit Stop post every week to see how we did last week to decide if you're going to give and how much you're going to give, you have a fundamental misunderstanding about why we give. So know that I'm not talking about money today to try and cushion our bottom line here. We're doing pretty well. And if you're not giving and you decide that you should start, I want you to do it for the right reasons. I want you to do it not because you think we're desperately grasping for a portion of your income. Because truthfully, like I said, we're full of generous and faithful people. So if you're here and you're not giving, we've been doing fine without your money, right? So this is not about us. This is not about how this impacts us. This is about how it impacts you. And just in case you're wondering, my position is salaried. It is not a commissioned job. So if God uses this message to convince a bunch of you that are not giving, that you should be, I don't see any percentage of that. I'm going to make the same thing either way. So making money for the church or making money for myself are in no way on my list of motives today. My motives, to be upfront, is I don't want your money and your stuff to have you. I do not want that for you. I want you to fully experience what it is when God has you, when God has your heart, when you fully trust him with everything that you have. And three, I want to be faithful to teach what the Bible says, even when it's difficult topics. That's part of my job. Because if you are not a tither and you talk to someone that is a long-term tither to a person, they will tell you that something fundamentally changed in their hearts and their lives when they started living out the principle of tithing in their lives. To a person, I challenge you, find someone who is a long-time tither that's like, nah, it didn't impact me at all. It will not happen. They will tell you it absolutely changed my heart. It changed our lives. And they will tell you it's one of the best things that they ever did. Now, it's important to know I never want to preach a works theology. This is not a salvation issue. Right? We are saved by grace. You're not going to get up to heaven and have God check your giving statements to see if you have enough to get in there. But this is a major issue of peace in your life. And it's also an issue of love. Because Jesus tells us pretty clearly we cannot be all about loving money and stuff and at the same time be all about loving people. And he came to love people. Matthew 6:24 tells us that. It says, no one can serve two masters. This is Jesus speaking. Either you will hate one and love the other, or you will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money. Now, that doesn't say you can't have money and love God. It says you can't serve both. You can't love both. So when it comes to our money, the question is, what or who do we love more, money or God? And if we're a serious-minded Christ follower, we don't get to have this one area where we don't allow him to have any impact, right? We don't get to sing like, I surrender everything except my finances. And that's not just true for money, that's true for everything. You don't get to say, God, I surrender all of my life to you except what I do on Friday night. Like, leave that alone, that's for me. Perry Noble said this, if Jesus isn't Lord of all, soon he won't be Lord at all. So if you've convinced yourself, I'm going to follow Christ, I'm going to walk with him, I'm going to take this seriously, and yeah, I'm going to keep this over here, like I'm going to do this, I'll serve, I'll be there every week, whatever you need, don't talk about my money, keep your hands off of my wallet, then that's a problem. If we try to keep any area of our life free from the impact and influence of Jesus, sooner or later we're going to look up and realize that he doesn't have influence and impact in any area of our lives. And when it comes to money, that's bad news for a lot of Americans and a lot of Christians. University of Notre Dame did a study a couple years ago that said 6 out of 7 Americans donate less than 2% of their income. 6 out of 7. We're not a very generous country in large part. And you might be thinking, okay, well, that's all Americans. Christians are better, right? Less than 6% of people who claim to be Christians actually tithe. Now, it's important, but I'm going to throw that term around. What is a tithe? A tithe literally means one-tenth. That's what the root of the word, that's the meaning of the word. Now, sometimes, and I talked to someone last night that said, and he was funny because he put this offering in before the message. He said, I haven't been giving, but I started to put money in. He said, I want to work towards a tithe. And I said, that's awesome. That's great. And I support that. We cheer you on. We're not saying like, hey, either you give 10% or you give nothing, right? But that is what the definition of a tithe is. Now, that's as compared to offerings. Anything above that is an offering, right? Anything 10% and you want to give more, something's happening, you want to give to a project in Gahanda, whatever that is, that starts to become an offering. And the Bible is very clear that it tells us to bring our tithe to the storehouse, and that means our local house of worship. That means your church. If you're visiting today, if Northgate is not your church, then you shouldn't feel compelled to give. I'd like for you to give at your church where you are connected, where you are engaged, where you're plugged in. If you give to other charities, things you support, it's a wonderful thing to do. I'm just going to tell you biblically that starts at the 11%. You might disagree with that, but we can talk about it. It's pretty clear in the Bible. And also, while we're getting in there, tithing is not an Old Testament law. sometimes people will be like, well, that's an Old Testament thing, right? And we don't follow, we're not Jewish people, we don't follow the Old Testament law. You know, we're New Covenant Christians. That's what allows you to have tattoos and wear flip-flops on Sunday. And that's true. All that's true. But tithing is not an Old Testament law. It doesn't appear in the law. It's a biblical principle that then carries over into the New Testament that Jesus teaches that follows through. So why does God demand a tithe then? I think that's really important. Why does God demand a tithe? It simply comes down to trust. It comes down to trust. It comes down to God wanting to know that he has our hearts more than anything else. And it's a simple illustration, and maybe you're wondering if we have a leak on the stage back here. We don't. This is a bucket. And somebody let me borrow this. I'm going to give it back to them later today as long as they come to the second service because I need it for that too. So look at this as a bucket. If this is all your possessions, right, and you put your stuff in here and you work hard for what's in your bucket, and you've got your retirement accounts in there, and you've got your savings accounts, and you're putting your home in there, and all these assets, and you're filling this up, and hopefully you're working hard so that you can fill this bucket up, right? And then you look at the bucket, and the problem is not filling the bucket, not working hard to do it. The problem is we become so enamored with the contents of the bucket. And we walk around, and we're keeping it from everyone, right? We don't want anyone to touch it. Like, don't knock it, don't spill it. And God comes up to us, and he's like, it's a nice bucket you got there. I'd like a little bit of that because I want to know that I have your heart. And God just asks for a little bit there on the top, and we get super protective of the bucket, and we walk around, we're like, well, God, what am I going to give you the bucket? The problem is with our bucket is that God is a fountain behind us, and we're fighting for this little bit, for this bucket, for this little tiny bit, and God's got a fountain that could fill this bucket up 1,000 times over. And he asks us for this little bit, and we become more enamored with what's in the bucket than what God can provide with the fountain. And that's the idea of tithing. That's why God asks us, because he wants us to trust him, the fountain, the supplier of all we have, much more than we trust what we have. So understand this, God's love is the only true motive for giving. That's it. It's the only real good motive. The first verse I learned, might be true for some of you too, is John 3:16, where it tells us God so loved the world that he gave. God is a giver. He gave his one and only son, that whoever believes in him shall not perish and have eternal life. God is a giver, and that's the motive. It's not about giving enough money so that God lets you into heaven. Giving is not about paying so that you have influence in church. Every now and then someone will say, like, can I meet with you? We haven't given a lot of money to the church. I'm like, I don't check that if you want to meet with me. Like, I don't even look at that ever. I want to meet with people that need to get together, not like, well, let's see how much you gave before I can sit down with you. You're not buying my time. You're not buying influence in the church. It's not about prosperity gospel. It's not a good motive to give, where if you have that, like, if you give, God will return it 10 times. He may well do that. But that's not a good reason to give. It's not about guilt alleviation, right? Don't give so that you because you feel bad. Don't give because you earned money in a questionable way and now you want to give God a little bit of that so you feel a little bit better about yourself. Now, if any of those things are the case for you, Mark is still going to cash your check. But I want to let you know why you actually should give. And the only true motive is when we understand that our God is a giver and that he's given so much to us and he's asked for us to give back to him. That's it. So as recipients of God's love and of generous giving, how can we become generous givers? I want to look at a story from the life of King David. It's in 2 Samuel 24. Now before we jump in, I got to give you a little backstory. So we know from the first chapter that David is going to take a census of his army. Decides he's going to take a census, and it's met with pushback, and he insists on doing it. And we see that it's kind of a questionable thing. Like, why would taking a census be sinful? God is angry at him for taking a census. You're like, well, that's a weird thing for God to get mad at. Why is that sinful for him to take a census? We see that he had been shifting his trust from what God could provide to the number of troops that he could control. Joab says this, may the Lord your God multiply the troops 100 times over, and may the eyes of my Lord the king see it. But why does the king want to do such a thing? And that's the heart of giving right there, isn't it? That's the bucket. That's the fountain. Is our reliance on what we have, or is our reliance on what God can provide? And David had begun to shift that focus. And he's like, I got to know everything that's in my bucket. And God's like, I got the fountain. He's like, no, it's okay. What is in the bucket? That was the census. David's troops are his bucket. And God's saying, I want you to rely on me, David. David's sin here is acting like any other king in the world. not the king of Israel, not the servant of the one true living God. So it takes about 10 months to do the census. 10 months later, 800,000 fighting men are counted in Israel, 500,000 in Judah. And as soon as he gets this information, he immediately becomes conscience stricken. He immediately feels bad. He knows that he's messed up. He says, I've sinned greatly in what I've done. Now, Lord, I beg you, take away the guilt of your servant. I've done a very foolish thing. And Gad, who's David's seer, he brings him this word from God. And he plays, it's history's first recorded game of would you rather, interestingly enough. It's in there. He said, okay, David, you screwed up. Here's the deal. Would you rather have 3 years of famine in the land, or 3 months of running from your enemies, or 3 days of a plague? And David picks the plague. I don't know. I think I might have taken the 3 months from the fleeing of the enemies. But David picks plague in the land, 3 days. He chooses the final option, and 70,000 of his people die over those 3 days. And David, as the leader, he feels deeply responsible, and he feels grief-stricken over the way that his people have suffered for his sins. And so we pick this up in 2 Samuel 24, 18 to 25. Here's what it says. On that day, Gad went to David and said to him, go up and build an altar to the Lord on the threshing floor of Araunah, the Jebusite. So David went up as the Lord had commanded through Gad. When Araunah looked and saw the king and his officials coming toward him, he went out and bowed down before the king with his face to the ground. Araunah said, why has my lord the king come to his servant? To buy your threshing floor, David answered, so I can build an altar to the Lord that the plague on the people may be stopped. Araunah said to David, let my lord the king take whatever he wishes and offer it up. Here are oxen for the burnt offering, and here are the threshing sledges and ox yokes for the wood, your majesty. Araunah gives all this to the king. Araunah also said to him, may the Lord your God accept you. But the king replied to Araunah, no, I insist on paying for it. I will not sacrifice to the Lord my God burnt offerings that cost me nothing. So David bought the threshing floor and the oxen, paid 50 shekels of silver for them. David built an altar to the Lord there and sacrificed burnt offerings and fellowship offerings. Then the Lord answered his prayer on behalf of the land, and the plague on Israel was stopped. Now, it's this interesting account of two very generous men, right? Because you have Araunah, who's willing to give the ground, the altar, and the oxen, everything for the sacrifices for David. He says, wow, you know, you're the king. If you want this, it will be an honor for me just to give it to you for your sacrifice. But then you have David, and David is determined to pay for those things, for the sacrifice. He recognizes the need not only for the sacrifice, but to sacrifice his own personal wealth to honor Yahweh. Otherwise, his alleged devotion to God would be cheap and meaningless if he didn't do that. So what made David committed not just to giving to God, but what gave him the heart that is truly behind a generous and cheerful giver? And I think there's three truths that I want to pull out that lead us to being givers, three truths that David understood that I want you to understand today. First one is that contentment is a heart issue. Contentment is a heart issue. It has to be. David knew that this sacrifice wasn't about religion or principle. He knew it was a choice that would reveal the condition of his heart. And it's the same thing with tithing. Giving is a regular reminder to be content with what we have and to trust God to take care of us, right? And I don't write a check anymore. I'm typing it in on my phone, on my bank app, and every time I push that send button, it is a reminder to me to be content with what I have, that we could keep that money and we could try to live on that, but God has said, no, I want you to trust me to do that. Paul laid this out so well in Philippians 4, 11 and 12, talking about contentment, where he said, I'm not saying this because I'm in need, for I've learned to be content whatever the circumstances. I know what it is to be in need, and I know what it is to have plenty. I've learned the secret of being content in any and every situation, whether well-fed or hungry, whether living in plenty or in want. So when we give, we loosen the grip that everything else has on our heart, and we give that over to God. We loosen the grip of money, we loosen the grip of our possessions, and we learn to be more content. That, for me, was the number one thing I learned when Amy and I first took financial peace. And I'm not great at it, I'm better. My natural bent is always going to be towards wanting more things and new things and brighter, bigger, better things. I'm always one more toy away from being happy. And God said through that to me, you've got to be content with what you have. And I think maybe that was Paul. I don't know. Paul didn't say, I've always been content, right? Paul said, I've learned to be content. He says it twice in that passage. I've learned to do this. And fortunately for me, and I hope for you, God allows me experiences that help to build that contentment. God has allowed me, really starting at a pretty young age, to be able to go to other places and to see what other people have. Because when you sit in a house with a family of five or six people that is the size of your walk-in closet, and you see in Rwanda people that have more joy, more contentment, more happiness than you've ever experienced, and they're living in this little room, something in your mind starts to connect where you say, you know what? There must not be a connection between stuff and happiness. Because everything, all of our marketing is geared, is designed to like, hey, if you buy this, this will make you happy. But then you have an experience like that, and you see people that have nothing and yet have so much more than you have, and something in your mind starts to go, wait a minute, that's not right. That must not mean that stuff and money equals happiness. And it doesn't. I'm really excited because in just over 2 weeks, I'm going back to Mexico, and I get to do some speaking there and some training of staff at an orphanage and some leadership stuff and all that. And I get to bring my oldest daughter, Grace. And I'm excited because she's 8. And I say all the time, I don't want my kids to have anything less. Like, everyone wants to provide a great life for their kids, right? I don't want to take anything away from them. I just want them to have an idea of how much they have. And so she's going to get to go to some of the poorest places in the world where we'll take a cup of milk with a spoonful of peanut butter and go to these migrant villages there. And these kids will be more excited about that cup of milk and that spoonful of peanut butter than she could ever be for a present on Christmas morning. And she'll watch people with so much less than her be so much happier than we are. So on a scale of 1 to 10, how would you rate your heart's level of contentment these days? I hope that it's something that is improving. It's an area where we're growing. Second thing, second truth that David understood that I want you to understand is that what we have isn't really ours. This is so freeing when we get this. The contents of the bucket are not actually yours anyway. I'm not just talking about 10%, I'm talking about all of it. Because God is the owner of all things. We are merely stewards of it. Giving is a regular reminder that we are managers of the resources that God has given us. 1 Corinthians 10:26 lays it out pretty clearly and tells us that the earth is the Lord's and everything in it. Yes, that means your house. Yes, that means your retirement account. Yes, that means your money, your savings account, all that stuff. It is the Lord's and everything in it. If you've ever bought food for your child at a restaurant, you understand this at a deep level. Because you can go and take your kid to a restaurant, and you pay for the whole thing. And then you ask your kid for one waffle fry, and they get like kind of testy about it, you know? And you're like, I bought you that whole thing. I want one waffle fry. Just pass that across the table. And they're like, this is mine. And you understand how God feels with us sometimes, being like, I gave you all of this. 10% is a relatively small amount. People that tithe will tell you, to a person, again, that somehow the 90% will go farther than the 100%. And I understand, I'm not great at math, but I understand that doesn't make mathematical sense, but this is bigger than math. And they will tell you it goes farther every single time, which I always think is a great thing. We won't do this, but we could bring two people up here. We could bring somebody that does not tithe, and we could bring somebody that has tithed for a long time. And both of them think the other one is crazy. Or this person looks and they're like, man, you're missing out on what God has for your life. You're trusting the contents of the bucket way too much. You have no idea what the fountain will provide if you'll just let go a little bit. You're missing out on one of the greatest things that God has. And this person stands there and looks over there and is like, you sucker, you drank the Kool-Aid, right? Like, that's what they think. They both think the other one's crazy. But in order to do that, we have a responsibility to structure our lives and our finances in a way that allows God to use us as a conduit of the work he wants to do around us. Andy Stanley tells us, if you don't choose what percentage of income you live on, someone else will choose it for you. It will quickly become 100%, for some people 120%. You will live on more than you need to. And we don't always say that in churches. That doesn't come up because we talk a lot about the 10%. Not a lot, but when we do, we talk about the 10%. God actually cares about the other 90% too. God cares about how we spend that, what we do, how we structure our lives and our finances. It's not paying off a mafia boss to keep you safe and being like, all right, God, here's your cut for the month. Now just make sure everything goes well for me. The Bible is full of clear instructions about how to handle our money. Things like giving and saving and then living on the rest, right? Determining that ahead of time, not just living and then seeing what's left to give and save. Things like living on a budget, making a plan, or getting out of debt and staying out of debt. And don't argue with me on that. If you want to argue about debt, you just got to find one verse that says debt is a good idea. Because I know you guys think, oh, I leverage debt. I'm super smart. Okay, cool. You are. But find a verse that says says, that's a good idea, and then bring it to me and we'll talk. You will not be doing that after. You'll be looking for a while. And that's why we talk about Financial Peace University here. That's one of the reasons why it's such a great thing to be able to lead, because I see people who I really think have generous hearts and the desire to be a part of what God wants to do. They want to be that conduit, and our financial position is in such a place that we can't do that. And we'll talk more about that in a little bit. David had all the money and the power in the world, all the money that a person could have desired, but he recognized those things were placed in his hand by God so that he could be a person that could direct those things the way that God wanted him to. When I talk about wanting something for you with your money, that's one, is to understand that God gives us money so we can be a conduit to what he wants to do. I mean, do you think it's a coincidence that God has given us resources, and then he connected us with the community on the other side of the world, a place where we need what they have as much as they need what we have, truthfully, so that we can be conduits of what God wants to do in Rwanda? Is that a coincidence that God did that, that he positioned us for that? And I'll tell you what I think is cool. God didn't need us to do that. Right? He didn't need us to do that. But aren't you glad he asked us to be a part of it? Because what we have is not really ours. Third thing, important to grasp. David grasped this, I want you to. Tithing is not circumstantial. Tithing is not a circumstantial thing. If you're waiting until it will be easy to tithe, you will die waiting. It's not going to be easy. David said, I will not sacrifice to my Lord burnt offerings that cost me nothing. John D. Rockefeller said, if I had not tithed on the first dollar I made, I would not have tithed the first $1 million that I made. Because some of us think, well, I don't make enough money to tithe. And when I make more money, then I'll tithe. If you make $10,000, 10% is $1,000, right? And you're like, okay, well, I don't make $10,000. That's no money. Listen, if you're making $100,000, now all of a sudden tithing's $10,000. You wouldn't give $1,000. You think you're going to give $10,000? I'm telling you, you won't. My firsthand experience with tithing, the first time, it was painful. It was painful. I was 23. I worked for a church. I had a bunch of credit card debt, several credit cards, huge student loans, and a car payment that was 25% of my income, which is a really bad idea. I've learned my lesson. You don't have to tell me that now. And I remember sitting there being like, man, I work for a church, right? I work for a church. My whole salary is dependent on people's tithes, and I'm not doing that. And of all the things I don't want to be in life, a hypocrite is far up the list. And I remember sitting there looking at the checkbook being like, this is a bad idea. Right? Mathematically, this is a horrible idea. And I remember writing the check for the month, for a month's income, and writing it and being like, this thing's probably going to bounce. This is a bad idea. And I remember putting it in, and I'm just telling you, it was such a harrowing experience because I didn't make a lot of money and I had a lot of expenses. But immediately, God began to partner with me. God said, okay, you're going to take this seriously. I'm going to join you in it. You want to get out of your financial mess. You don't want this to be a lifelong thing. And he started to do that. Now, much later, after David's interaction that we saw with Runa, we see this really cool thing. We see he's still an exceptionally generous giver as he helped prepare Israel to build the temple under his son, King Solomon. Look at this in 1 Chronicles 29. David says, besides my devotion to the temple of my God, I now give my personal treasures of gold and silver for the temple of my God, over and above everything I provided for this holy temple. 3,000 talents of gold and 7,000 talents of refined silver for the overlaying of the walls of the building. Now, this is dangerous, but I did some math. 7,000 talents of silver is 525,000 pounds. Silver yesterday was $15.39 an ounce. It's $129 million in the silver that David generously gave. The 3,000 talents of gold, though, at 224,000 pounds, at $1,214 an ounce, is $4.35 billion. David was an exceptionally generous giver. But if David hadn't been insistent on giving to God with such integrity a small amount earlier with Aruna, he gave 25 ounces of silver, just under $400 for that sacrifice that we read about. If David hadn't been so insistent on doing that, do you think later he would have been willing to give God such a vast fortune for the temple? I don't know that he would. I think David had learned that giving to God was something that he did, that it was fundamental to his character. It was not circumstantial. It was not occasional. He was consistent, and he was faithful as God had asked. God has given us clear mandates on how to handle our money biblically, and one of those things is tithing. I tell people, and I hope this doesn't sound more callous than it is, that if you want to pray, God, please bless my finances. You know, God, and I'm not mocking you praying that, but I'm telling you, if you're going to pray that, start by doing the things that he has given us in his word to do. Start by doing the things we talked about, living on a budget, give, save, and then live on the rest, right? You got to start doing that. You have to start handling money God's ways. And then when you say, God, I need your help, he's saying, all right, they're starting to get it, and I'm going to partner with them in this. If you want to experience God's blessing in a way that you have not, become a tither. The blessing and the freedom that you will have of trusting God and really putting him first, right? Of putting your confidence in the fountain, in the source, not in the bucket, not in what you have. If you want to experience the peace of having a heart that is content with what you have and with who you are, become a tither. The freedom that comes with knowing that you are just a manager of what you have. That is what I want for you and your money. And that is what God wants as well. Let's pray.